Welcome to Signals, the podcast where we step back from the hype to look at what's shaping technology. In each episode, we talk with industry experts to surface trends, question assumptions, and unpack why things work the way they do today. We're focused not just on what's new, but on the decisions and developments that got us here and what to expect down the road. I'm your host, Michael Dowden, and here with me today is Nir Kaufman. Nir is the tech lead at Tikal and a GDE in web technologies. Nir, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Fantastic. So what is the big thing you want to talk about today? Talk to me a little bit about the kind of the state of AI engineering and what you've been working on.
Well, I think the most interesting topic these days is the redefinition of our traditional titles. You mentioned AI engineering, but honestly, I don't think no one actually knows what it is. to be honest, I'm part of the industry for the last 20 years, so I can share with the audience that when I started my career, all of us we were just software engineers. That was the only one title, and then at some point, something happened, and we got this this kind of split between an expertise on the front end side with web technologies, and suddenly you've got back end developers. But at some point, all of us merged into a new title called full stack developers. and now today we see this title. I think that's the most interesting part to start with, because the titles are the pure definition of kind of like the starting points of what our expertise boundaries, what are expected from us, which learning path should I take. So AI engineering, that's an amazing starting point. Yeah.
Right. So what has changed in your life in the last couple of years related to some of these developments in our industry?
So first of all, my workflow, my personal workflow as a developer, I like to call it the transition from being a programmer that actually code to a person who manage code. I like to call it from a developer to an orchestrator. If you look at my desk today, if you would peek into my office during my day job, you probably find me today. Instead of typing a lot, doing some preparation, instantiate an army of agents and coding assistant, and just orchestrate the entire process while maintaining myself and my expertise in the loop. So it's certainly changed the way I work, that's for sure. And that's from the coding AI assistant. I mean, the workflow is completely different. And not just me, the entire team. From graphic design to product to QA engineers.
Okay, that makes sense. So what are some of the trade-offs you've run into? Have there been any risks or challenges in addition to the benefits you've been seeing?
Yeah, well, of course, it's always a trade-off. So it's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. Well, the biggest trade-off is, I'm not sure if I'm going to call it a trade-off, but you can't count 100% on coding assistant to produce production-ready code. We're not there yet. I think that something very interesting happening in the industry today is that the whole layer of junior developers are kind of disappeared. And senior developers or experienced developers that know and understand software becoming more on demand while they're using this coding assistant. So it's a challenge, because you need to shift your mind, like I said before, from a developer to an orchestrator, from a person who not just thinking about the problem, thinking about the architecture, understanding the product, but also the person who used to implement it, actually code, actually produce computer programming language, it's a shift in the way we think. Now the focus is less on implementation details and more on the overall architecture and product understanding. Yeah.
Okay. How have you been able to measure or demonstrate the impact of this new way of working?
The measure, the most straightforward measurement will be a time to production. I mean, again, an experienced developer who know the craft of software development using know how to use this coding assistant, because it's not just prompting, do something for me and give it back. It's much more than that. It's a tool that you need to master. But I think that once you get it, the most straightforward impact that you can measure is from requirement to production. That's it, and it's becoming more and more short.
So, are there any specific patterns or anti-patterns that you have seen emerging as you work more with agents as a kind of a an orchestrator more than just a coder?
Well, I think the magic word, the gold, the super skill that we need to acquire, we call it context management. It's all about context, because once you started to build a professional development AI driven environment, the biggest challenge will be, well, I've got different autonomous agents that I expect them to do some work, but each one of them is dealing with a different aspect of the same code base or basically the same feature. So one of the biggest challenges the skills that we need to master is how do they share context? How do separate different programs know how to communicate with each other and in order to achieve the goal?
So you're telling me communication is still the hardest part.
But that's the beauty of it, you know, because here's a message for the people who are listening to us, especially people who just got started in software development. Usually when you get started in this craft, it's all about the code. It's all about coding. It's all about, I know how to type Python, JSON, Java, whatever. But at some point you understand that being a software developer is like, I would say 80%, not even touching the keyboard. It's about understanding what you build. It's understanding, like I said before, the product. It's solving the challenge on a whiteboard. Is building a spec, defining the task, breaking it down. And the last 20%, it's actually, you know, put your headphones and code it down. So today we're doing exactly that, but to drop the extra 20%. So we're still doing architecture. We still know how to solve our problems on the whiteboard. We still need to be very, very clear and when we're writing the specs. We still need to break down into tasks that make sense, and then we can deliver it into an AI agent software. They're doing it. So communication was always a thing, but a software developer was able to, you know, to start, like, to pass the first years in his career, even if his communication skills are not 100%, because he still got an implementation skill. Today, I believe that's different. I think that the key word is you must sharpen your communication skills more than ever, because your communication skills, whatever it's, you know, language or written language, that's the key to success with basically large language models that change the shape of the industry.
Yeah, that makes sense. So communication skills are worth paying some attention to right now.
More than ever. In my career, I find that being able to be clear, to communicate to what I'm doing, but not to a person, to a coding assistant. Yeah, it's much more important than ever. Yeah.
So, if somebody is wanting to ramp up in this area? Are there specific tools you think they should use or specific steps you think they should take to get started?
Yeah, for first of all, I would say it's not about the tool. It was never about a specific tool. It's just like code editors, like IDEs. There is always like a discussion, argument in our ecosystem. Which framework is the best one? Which IDE are you using? Is it VS Code? Is it JetBrains? But it was never about the tool that you use. It's more about how to use it because the concept is the same. It's like you know, if you know how to drive a car, if you've got a driving license and you find yourself in a completely new a car, you will be able to find all the instruments that needed in order to drive. So let's take it back to the question that you asked me. I mean, chasing every new coding assistant, new model, new software that pops up that just, you know, that's not going to work. I say pick one, whether it's GitHub Copilot or Claude Code or Cursor, it doesn't really matter. And focus on understanding first how coding assistant works. What's the fundamentals of LLM, large language models? What is a context window? What is context management? Master the craft of prompt engineering. And once you've got this, it doesn't really matter which tool you use, but once you choose one, I'll say just go with it, master it, learn the API, learn the features, and you're good to go. So I personally use Claude Code. That's my go-to. And honestly, I don't even care about what's going on around me because I picked it up. I did the exact same learning path. I mastered this tool. I understand everything that all the fundamental terms of and I can understand the technology and I'm good with it. So I'm able to be very successful and being very productive because I'm like, you know, these horses that doesn't care what's going on around them. But if tomorrow you're gonna drop me into a different coding AI system, I believe it'll be okay because again, it's not about the tool. I learned how to drive. I didn't learn about this specific vehicle.
Sure, that makes a lot. This is a really great way of framing that.
It's the same for a learning path for people who want to step in. I mean, again, from the software development aspect, focus more on the fundamental software engineering, which is not about coding. I mean, build yourself a learning path and make sure you've got some product skills. So I will build just, you know, two different learning paths, one of how to use and understand coding assistance and LLM and this technology, and the other one, how to be a software developer, dropping the coding part of it.
Yeah, sure. So you're a GD in web technologies, which means you've done a lot of front-end work as well as other types of coding. So who would you say this approach is for? Back-end developers, front-end developers, data engineers, does it really matter what your role was before?
Honestly, I honestly believe that it doesn't matter anymore. I can share that some known company, even from my own ecosystem, companies that people know, so I don't want to do any name dropping. Just last week, one of them, a very known one worldwide, just published on LinkedIn that they decided to merge the front end and the back end and the data guilds together. And they decided that every developer in the company from now on is going to be called an X engineer. There is no front end, back end, DevOps, whatever. So honestly, I believe it doesn't matter anymore. I think that. I think it's whatever you spend the last 10 years doing JavaScript, classic front-end development, or hardcore Python development on the back end, you never seen UI, or anything in between. I think we came into a point where we've got a very, very good and positive regression. Back to square one. We are tech people. We are, first of all, we are software engineers. We know how to solve problems using computer technologies. And to take it from this point on. So if you ask me, that's it. That's the actually, I recently had a keynote session that I'm going to do again, but very shortly. Yeah, I called it, it's the end of the front as we know it, because that's the, I think that's where we're going. And even me personally, I'm in the process of like changing my title, my professional title, going back to that I'm a software engineer, I'm more than a software engineer, but that's it. No front end, no back end.
So how did we get to this point? What are some of the things that have developments that you have seen happen over the last few years to get us here? Did it happen all at once, or has this been kind of a slow progression in your estimation?
Well, the problem was that it happened all at once. I mean, the technology, talking about artificial intelligence, it's here for at least 20 years. I'm not that old, but I remember that I'm quite old, but not that much. I remember that like, I don't know, 12 years ago, something like that, I was part of a team that used artificial intelligence. So it's important, first of all, to mention that it's there in production for a long time. What happened is that it's become very, very accessible. Once large language models, once I'm able to consume them, as a service, that was the big bang. And then, like every kind of new technology or new hype, everyone started to use it. Well, without even thinking about, you know, other aspects in software development, we find out about them later on. For example, security, just mentioned, you know, something like security, like scale, like how much money that's going to cost me. That's not for free. At some point, we need to understand it. So it's happened all at once, but nothing important really, nothing really changed dramatically. I would say in the first year where AI suddenly become, you know, accessible for everyone. But right now, what we can see the difference. Right now, we can see that it's kind of calmed down. And companies and startup and engineers are sitting down and saying, well, we got it, we understand how it works. Well, Model is gonna get better and better. That's fine, but we need to handle other aspects in order to make it a reliable technology that we can validate. So the hype happened all at once, and right now I believe there is a certain kind of relaxation and calm down, and well, this technology is here to stay. It's obviously going to change the way we work and build. It give us the ability to use sophisticated technology that wasn't that accessible before. But we have to solve other problems in order to build products that last. If you look around you, you see that a tiny startup or even individual developers that, you know, that suddenly overnight build something with AI, and 2 days after it you read about them, and some company bought them for millions of dollars and then become like a modern Cinderella. That's amazing, but we need to think about, you know, the long running journey of this. Mm-hmm.
Do you, when you hear a story like that, do you ever have concerns about like security and privacy and other things? One of the bits of feedback that I see people discussing is concerns about how do we make sure that, because this technology puts coding in the hands of everybody, essentially, like you just said.
Yeah.
If you're not an experienced engineer, how do you know what to look out for? Do you see a risk there at all?
It's easily. You don't. That's the reason we still need a security expert. That's the reason. But I'll tell you this. I think this, the whole world of vibe coding, like everyone can build software. It's amazing for a lot of other aspects. Think about it. You want to build something, a utility for your own your life, your own problems. You never touched computers before. You kind of like managing your stuff in Excel tables or like a regular notebook, and now you can build something without coding. That's amazing. Now that's for a personal use. In the real world, yeah. Now I think that I see it. I mean, experienced developers' expertise are still needed. We just, like I said before, we just dropped the implementation part. So yeah, there is a a lot of aspects about security, like every software. Come on, it's not just about AI. Now the buzz is around AI technologies, but take it like years before, and we were concerned about our email, about searching Google, about accessing our health information over the internet in general. I mean, the problem was always there, and it's still there. Just the technology changed, yeah. But it is there, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So something you mentioned a minute ago was about kind of how quickly this has developed. And what's interesting to me, there was an XKCD comic from, I want to say it was 15 years ago, roughly,
All
plus or
right.
minus a few years. Somebody's asking their developer, "I want you to identify where this photo was taken." Cool, we have geotagging. I can look this up, no problem. Not easy, trivial, right? And I want to know if it's a photo of a bird. And in the cartoon, he's saying, "Wow, that's a really hard problem. Like, we have to have a whole team of researchers and engineers." And today,
You
trivial.
bet.
It's like, oh yeah, I don't. That's a solved problem now. 15 years ago, it was seemed as almost impossible, to
Yeah.
the extent that there's a cartoon about it, right? What other types of impossible things do you think are now within our grasp at this point?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, well, I'm a tech guy. I would say like there isn't such a thing as impossible, right? It's nothing is impossible. You just need enough time, money,
Yeah, right, exactly. No, for sure.
you can do everything. But impossible things is like exactly like the discussions that we had before you asked me these questions. I mean, the one of the amazing impossible things that happen right now that theoretically, even practically, every person with an idea of doing like solving any aspect of his own personal life, environment, family, friends, habits, whatever, it actually can do it right now. The information is much more easily accessible through natural language. Then, well, let's talk about the internet in general. Yeah, when the internet emerge into our lives, suddenly a lot of information become very, very accessible. You don't need to buy. I learned how to program from books, from printed books. You don't need it anymore. Yeah, we don't need it anymore. Yes, so that was the first step of revolution. Now I don't use Google anymore. No one, I think, use Stack Overflow anymore. Even if I want to book my vacation, it started with go to Gemini and start a dialogue with natural language. This is like this vision was there for a lot of time, and again, I wouldn't say we thought it was impossible, but we thought it's going to be very, very hard, and now it's natural. Now it's I can use my natural language and get information in the form of a dialogue very, very, very easily and straightforward, and that opened up a whole new world of possibilities, because it's all about data eventually. It's about information and how you handle the information. But again, we've seen a lot. You remember, like, not so long ago, there was a huge hype around Alexa and Google Home. And now you have this tiny smart speaker, and you can say, "Hey Alexa, buy me tomatoes." And the whole industry was like a huge hype. Well, it changed everything. Now we can just talk and say what we want, and this Alexa thingy through the speaker gonna solve, and it's completely disappeared. And same with all the smart glasses, and same with when WordPress become popular and we're saying, well, I've got business. I don't need to pay for a developer to build me a website. I can do it on my own. I can use Wix. I can use WordPress. No one thought that web developers are going to disappear, and they didn't.
You've kind of illustrated that this is just another step in a long progression of incremental technologies. And
yep.
I know that there's been a vision, as long as we've had computers, there's been a vision of how to make the computers do things with the least amount of effort.
Exactly.
And no matter what technology comes out, you still don't get rid of engineers, you still don't get rid of developers, you still don't replace the fact that there is a need to understand how to speak some specific language to instruct the computers in what to do.
Technology. The definition, the roles, the skill set has shifted a little bit. But, you know, for experienced software developers, we don't get too excited about it. We've been there before. Like you say, well, we know how to adapt. I think that most of the non-positive excitement about this technology is not coming from experienced software developers. It's coming from, I don't know, mid-level and less. They're really concerned about everything is changing right now. And how am I going to be able to build a professional career in the industry where what to do, what to learn, what's going on right now? So, yeah, exactly like you said, I've seen this as like another step in the everlasting evolution of technology. And we need to adapt. We just need to adapt. That's it. We don't need to get hysterical. We don't need to sit and say, well, then that's it. I'm not going to be needed anymore. I think it's exactly the opposite. We are going to be needed to more and more, maybe less of us. Maybe today you don't need to build an entire team, yeah? But a human in the process is still the great filter. That's still like the most important, how you say it, when you get a loop. I forgot the word for it. A link, yeah. I like the weakest link. the most important link in this chain.
Yep. It makes sense. So from your perspective, kind of what do you see as the next step? Like, where are we going to be next in our role as engineers?
Well, first of all, everything is going to blow up in our faces. Not on my face and your face, but all the money that being invested, like that this whole now this whole balloon gonna pop. We've seen it before, yeah. Right now, every startup that mentioned I'm doing something with AI technology being like a investor just dropping money on top of their head. So obviously, the next step that's gonna be the big bang, gonna blow up. A lot of startups are going to completely disappear because right now they are able to, to do something smart with the technology and get by. But at some point, they need to deliver something useful to the world. So that's going to be the first step. And us as engineers are like the beginning of our discussion. Our title, our definition, going to go back to the basics. Software engineers, technologists, people who still maintain the skill of understand technology. We're gonna like redefine first of all who am I, what skills are needed. I believe it's gonna push more into soft skills and less on I remember like easily how to code Python, for example. So that's going to be the next step. You'll see more software engineers that used more and more automatic tools as orchestrators. Like I said, like we waited for it for years. I waited. I'm still waiting for a point where I don't need to type. That's not the most interesting part of my job as a software engineer. There's a lot of other challenges, and I want to take it away. like automatic testing. I want to take it away, documentation, like a lot of stuff that just, you know, taking my time. So that's going to be the next step. I think, I believe, I mean, you know, if I try, because no one really knows what's going to happen. But I believe like that not so far away from now, maybe few years, we're going to see like, again, first of all, it's going to start, it's already started, like merging all of this separation titles expertise into one person, like the technologist, all right? Yeah, and more software developers as will use automatic tools and being able to move much more faster ever than before.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I'm already seeing is that companies are, I think, pivoting away from some of the early things they tried to do, because obviously the hype is building and every company, oh, we've got to slap AI on everything.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a fundamental difference, I think, in utilizing AI to build traditional software versus building software that has integrated AI that is interfacing with real people, right? Do you see that as a distinction? Is there something that you would change about how you build things?
Clear, it's a clear distinction. Some challenges, some problems in the world that we can solve with software are like a classic use case for this technology. Like this technology, it's literally gonna change something radically. And a lot of other traditional software that we use today or traditional product that we use today that try to force, you know, where we've got something AI inside of us, that's going to completely disappear, if you ask me, because it's being like, I don't get any extra value. It seems like that every simple web application that solved my own problems for the last 10 years suddenly got an AI feature that I'm not even use because it doesn't bring me real value. On the other hand, other products, other industries, that's completely gonna change the way the product is built, the problem is solved. Yeah,
right. No, I think that makes sense. I have this conversation. I've been having this conversation with my team for the last, you know, couple of weeks about, hey, maybe let's don't build this as an AI feature when traditional technology can do it really well. But hey, here's these problems that we can't really solve that way very easily. And that's a good use case, right? It's all about making sure you're delivering that value, right?
It's basically every industry that deals with a lot of data, especially written text. You don't need to go that far. I work in a company. I'm a consultant, a hands-on consultant. We are like an expert developers for hire company, kind of. Yes, so I have this privilege to work with different companies and startups. So, for example, I work with a startup that really make a change in the world of court, of like a law, criminal law. Because currently, you've got a judge, you've got lawyers, and they in the middle of a session that need to determine and process evidence and a lot of written text, because that's gonna literally can affect a person's life. And a traditional person in a court is this, it's usually a woman for some reason. The type, you know, the type, everything that's being said. And as a lawyer that need to have like a team of junior lawyers just to go over files, and AI can solve it immediately. And it's like it's needed. Same for medical. Now an expert doctor got a challenge, got something you need to explore some new disease, or something that he doesn't know how to handle it. He's going to sit down in his office and he's going to do a lot of research and read all the medical books and articles and research that it's done before, and it's going to take him a lot of time. But it's just text. So LLM specifically can like drastically change the way he works. That every website got this ridiculous chat with us powered by AI. I think they're doing it just to get some money. Hey guys, we're using AI. Do you want to give us some few millions? We promise that it's gonna, yeah. But yeah, there's like a distinct, like we see it everywhere, exactly like you say, like forcing something that use AI technology into a product that doesn't really need it. There's no like real dramatic value out of it, just to keep the hype, and products that AI is literally change way, change everything. Yeah.
So you brought up a really good point about some of the things that fundamentally kind of need to go away, very time-consuming things. You also mentioned that effectively from what you just said, maybe the role of the junior attorney is going away. Maybe the role of the junior developer is going away. You also
Problem.
mentioned that the bubble is maybe about, it's going to burst at some point down the road. We're gonna see a shift and a right sizing of the technology. Do you see a risk or a challenge to how we learn and train people in a lot of industries, in engineering in particular, if the role of the junior developer goes away? How do we train the next round of senior engineers? How do you learn this technology moving forward?
It's gonna have to do like I mean every person today around the world that in his career, probably people just started their career in every profession. Yeah, we talked about lawyers, about doctors, about engineers. Every person that currently his job is to do manual work of processing data is he's in a huge risk. And that's the same for junior developers, because when you just started your software development career, you don't have the experience, you don't have the ability to understand architecture and to see the big picture. You just don't have it. It's something that you haven't learned about it. The only thing that you've got to get started with, it's this manual coding skills. And that gets you into the industry and then you start to evolve. I think that the change will have to start with the universities. I believe that in some point we're gonna have to understand that computer science degree, the syllabus should look completely different. Completely different. I mean, it's not how when we need first to understand how a person armed with these superpowers of this technology is look like. Well, what, map the skills, like build a persona around it, and then the changes have to start from the bottom, from the academy, from school. But my young kid is actually today, February 4th, turned 14. He's doing his homework with Gemini. And it's in his school today, they don't use notebooks anymore. They've got like their backpacks, it's just a laptop. It start over there. It start at elementary school. How we train it, I think no one knows. I think we're still in the process of defining the skills that make a software. Let's come up with something. I don't know. You know what? Let's do a nice closure. Like, we're still in the process of defining what is an AI engineer. And once we get it, I mean, if you ask me right now, what skills needed to be a front-end developer? Very easy for me. I can give you a list of technology, a list of skills you need to have. Nice. And we started this session with this huge question, right? Once we get this list, once we are able to define how an AI-driven software engineer or tech, whatever name we're gonna come up with, only then we will be able to understand how to train the next generation of software developers. But until we get this, that I think it's an open question. How we train them, what they need to learn, no one really knows. I mean, not yet.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you see any specific external forces that may have an influence on how this adapts over time?
Well, the external forces, you know, everything is driven by money eventually when you know how it works. Currently, is the huge companies, the leaders, the tech leaders, you know, the drive this entire industry for forever. But I'll be honest, I'm more concerned about other aspects of where AI technology can do real damage. I'm more concerned about other aspects in life than software engineering. I'm more concerned about how we consume and use the media. I mean, today I can generate images that look real. How do I engineer how people think? You're talking about external forces. I'm more concerned about, you know, governments and countries and the whole new world order. That now with AI tools can engineer how common people think. That's the thing that concerns me today with this technology. I'm not concerned about, I don't see any external forces like trying to affect the software engineering too much. I think the other way, I think I see a lot of cooperation. It seems like, you know, it seems like that in some points we see it. It's like new protocols that pops up. And suddenly, you know, it started with OpenAI, started with a specific protocol, and then Anthropic said, well, you did a good job. Let's cooperate. Let's make it a standard. So we're seeing more and more standards like this being adopted from, you know, these tech leaders. So yeah, eventually it's driven by money, but software engineering, I think we'll see more and more standards, protocol, and cooperation. And like I said, I'm concerned about a lot of other aspects talking about its technology. Software engineering is not part of them.
Right. Well, one of the things that's happened in the last few years, and it is kind of a supply chain issue with NPM packages, for example, being compromised. We saw one was announced recently that Notepad++, a very popular software for Windows, was compromised through its supply chain to, right? It now we have the ability to more easily do those things at scale. And in fact, people that are not experienced software engineers potentially have the ability to introduce these types of vulnerabilities at scale. I see that as a fundamental part of the industry moving forward is addressing our supply chain issues. Do you see anything related to that? How do we kind of leverage the tools to solve that problem?
We're still in the process. Like I said, we're seeing the first. I mentioned before that I feel like, you know, the hype is a little bit calmed down, and now we started to deal in real problems. So the solution for this for supply chain attacks and generally speaking about like the ability of people to do like a real damage. The solution is standards. It's being able to supervise protocols. And we are at this point. It's like HTTP protocols. The same thing. We've been there before. It was a process until we got it right. Until we got something that we can rely on. Okay, but let's talk about authentication in general. We need like a huge shift. I believe that in my own vision, I think that this journey with AI, talking about security, we're gonna see more and more biometric adoption of identification devices than before. Up until now, it was, you know, nice to have. I can open up my laptop with my fingerprint. Look at the airports. Have you seen that the revolution of like scanning your face and that's it? You don't need papers anymore. It's just one step further, and I don't need any papers at all. I can travel the world just, you know, scan my eye, take my fingerprint, And I think that AI technology, talking from, you know, security and authentication aspect, I think it's going to push it very, very fast into being the standard way, first of all, for human being to identify. First of all, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's going to be the next part. But yeah, everything else is just going to be, we're just going to need to let these big companies and innovators, more corporations, standardize stuff for us. And we'll be good. We've been there before.
So you've mentioned that the most important thing somebody can work on realistically is working on communication skills, kind of picking a tool, learning the technology, learning the processes around this. Is there any other specific takeaway you want for the audience? Like, what is the big thing you want people to learn or do or consider as part of this conversation?
Message. One thing from this entire talk I would like to deliver is, first of all, calm down. Here's the message from us people who've been in the industry for years. It's the next evolution. Everything, we good. We need to adapt. Stop focusing on implementation details. I know it sounds strange, but I work with a lot of students, a lot of junior developers these days, and I'm telling them it's good news for you, because you can drop, you know, to learn how to work with a specific programming language and focus on understanding technology. So that's the takeaway. We first of all, stop right now. Take a deep breath. Stop chasing about content creators. I think the talking about our industry, the tech industry, the people that are most benefit from this entire hype is content creators and bloggers and thought leaders and people who tweet in Twitter or TikTok or whatever platform you use, and generating a lot of noise. I mean, again, we've been there before. We know how it is. So the takeaway is, calm down, sit for a second, understand that eventually one of the most useful tools that you're going to work with as a software engineer is probably going to be based on a large language model. So start to focus. Choose one of these coding assistants as a starter. Take video courses from the providers, from OpenAI Academy, from Anthropic. Don't overload yourself with YouTubes and courses from different places. I mean, I can see a very positive change recently, actually, the past 6 months. All the major companies started to release for free a formal education of the technology. Go into the Google, you've got like, we're going to teach you like from the source. We're building these tools. We're going to teach you how it works for free. So each one of them got its own free academy. Like I said, Google, Anthropic, OpenAI. So learn from the source. Focus on understanding how these large language models work and less on which one is better. Then, because that doesn't matter. Yeah, that's the most important thing, message that I would like to deliver. And keep calm. That's it. I mean, just another step. Don't get too calm. Yeah, you need to adapt. You need to adapt. A software developer today needs to know how to work with a coding assistant much more than just, you know, prompting something, do this for me. All right, that's a new skill. I say to my students in the past year, I say, there's a new programming language that you need to learn. It's called natural language. It's called English. Up until now, you used to program in TypeScript. The new programming language is English most of the time. So that's another thing to take into consideration, because the technology is going to get better and better. And you know, for us, for people who are in this industry for years, I'm happy. I mean, The whole reason that we invented the high-level programming language is to be more close to natural language than machine language. And now, like, we achieved the holy grail. Now we are like a step next to, I can actually write down what I want to do, and that's going to happen. So build your learning path, learn from the source, focus on one tool, understand that English become an extension of the traditional programming language. And I think that's going to keep people, like, hopefully going to help them focus a little bit and understand where they should, how to build their roadmap, their learning curve.
So you mentioned something about the programming languages that gave me one more question, which is, like, originally we had physical programming, right? You would literally move things around in hardware in order to program the computer. And then we have assembler language, right? Machine code, assembler language. Then you have your first generation languages, your second generation languages. And every language generation was specifically there to make life easier for the programmer, right?
Yeah.
While it ultimately gets compiled down to something else for the computer to understand. Do you see another generation of computer languages potentially where, because we as programmers are going to be using English, where maybe we develop a completely different programming language with different characteristics that we use as a part of this?
I think not. I think that the opportunity in this technology is that it's going to be the last programming language that we need to build. Because exactly like you said, the whole time since the invention of computer programming, we as human beings had like always trying to achieve the, like I said, the holy grail, the language, and it's much more easier for us to understand. It's gonna translate to machine code, all right? There's a very, very, very nice video of Uncle Bob speaking about why do we have 30 or 40 or 50 or 100 different programming languages? Why not all of us, the whole human race of that building software, just, you know, come together and build one programming language for all of us? That's our interest. We want to make our life easier, and I think that the potential with AI technology is that now we are very, very close to achieve this. There's going to be the end of programming languages. Only one: English, natural language. Probably English. It doesn't mean that. Well, I know how to speak English good enough. That's good enough. It means that exactly like you learn how to write JavaScript or Python or Java in an optimized way, how to write your loops better, how to manage your memory. It's like the fact that English become your new programming language means that you need to take it, to learn it, how to optimize your English prompt engineering, how to optimize your English the same way you optimized your computer programming language. Yeah, but, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe a few years from now, that's going to be only one programming language, our language.
Okay, cool. So, what do you have upcoming? It looks like you're going to be at International JavaScript Conference a couple times over the next few months. Other events where people can maybe find you, or any place you would like folks to reach out if they have any questions or want to engage with you?
Well, first of all, everyone who listens, I'm very available through social media. If you find something interesting and you'd like to discuss more, feel free to try to contact me, you know, through LinkedIn. And actually, I have like zero privacy. I mean, if you Google my name, you're probably going to find my home address and phone number and social security number. So it's easy to reach me. So if you've got something urgent and want to try, like, you know, to talk offline, I'm there. Speaking about physical, yes, so like you mentioned, I like to call it a tour. I'm going on a tour soon. So I'm going to be visiting we're going to start in London in I think it's May, but I'm not sure. Okay. London and then San Diego, and then Berlin. So yeah, I think it's covered a lot of ground. So if you're around, I'd be more than happy. I'm gonna this year on this tour, I'm gonna focus on my up-to-date 2-day boot camp. That's literally gonna try to take this AI engineering into practical. So we're gonna talk about how we shift the way we think about software, but in parallel, we're gonna need to learn how to build it. So that's what's gonna happen if you're around. Yeah, more than soon. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Nir, thank you so much for spending the time with me today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of Signals. Please be sure to follow DevMio at devm.io oder auf Deutsch unter entwickler.de. Thanks.
What he?